Podcast. It's the All Heaven Beer and Talk Show. My name is Gary, and this thing I make by myself in an undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, just about every week, and have been doing so since 2015. If you are new to the show, let me try to describe it simply, which is no mean feat because this show defies a simple explanation. I love beer and technology and talking to myself, so I decided to combine all of those things. I randomly select a craft beer from a wonderful supply that I keep here in the All Heaven Beer and Talk bunker, tell you a little bit about that specific style and what it means and the flavor experiences I should expect, then I drink that beer. In between sips, I tell you about some interesting, quirky, and or weird technology-related stories that you may have missed from the previous week, and one funny and or weird animal story until I finish the beer. So, what is the show, really? It's beer education, it's informative facts, it's packed with bad puns, it's I'll have a beer and talk. Hooray! To help me choose from the collection of interesting beers I have here in the bunker, I use a device I call the randomizer to help me choose. And that's the sound you're hearing right now. It'll bring up a result in a moment, so let's see what I will be drinking. Hooray! This week's beer is Boulder, Colorado's Upslope Brewing Company's Strawberry Mint IPA, a 7.5% ABV American IPA. American India Pale Ales, not to be confused with American Indian Pale Ales, are basically the American take on the traditional India Pale Ale. Basically, they are hoppier because American brewers are obsessed with hops. This specific beer has been newly canned by Upslope Brewing, coming into existence in March of this year, so there's not a whole lot of information about it out there. Couldn't find anything worth mentioning from beeradvocate.com, so I went to their website and found this. Quote, "This signature beer features a subtle blend of peppermint and hops to offer a unique blend of floral and crisp herbal bitterness. That bitterness is balanced with the sweetness derived from the strawberries and the malt, giving this beer a refreshing character that doesn't fit with the 7.5% alcohol by volume." Oh man, once again I'm having something that reminds me that spring and summer are in fact seasons that do exist, and are coming any day now. We had a little glimpse of that yesterday, sandwiched in between weeks consisting of rainy 57-degree days. The sky was clear, the sun was out, and it was almost 70 degrees by the afternoon. We're having little glimpses of that today, but I'm looking through the periscope in the surface world. It's overcast and looks a little gross again. So, oh well. Springtime for Portland will come soon. All right, I want to drink this, so let me switch to the beer mic so you can hear the opening and the pouring. All right, it's an orangish color with an off-white head and smells all like fresh mint with a tiny hint of peppermint. That's interesting. Wow, that is an odd taste. It's a bitterness mixed with mint and that slight hint of peppermint in there. That is very strange. I don't really taste any strawberries in there, but this is very, very interesting. It's not bad. Not bad at all, actually. I like it when I have tastes that I can't quite identify. Wow, that is weird. The day that I am recording this episode is Earth Day 2017, and coincidentally, I have a couple enviro-friendly stories. Weird how that works out. I didn't plan for it. So let's begin. Were you aware that everybody poops? It's true. Even people in Portland poop. Were you also aware that Portland poop gets flushed away with sewage, and that sewage decomposes into methane gas, and that's captured and turned into energy? It's true. The Columbia Wastewater Treatment Plant uses bacteria to break down solid waste, producing methane. 77% of that methane is collected, most of which is used to generate electricity and heat boilers at the facility, and some of the gas is sold as an energy source to the Malarkey Roofing Company. What about that last 23%? Well, it is currently burned off in waste gas burners, which has the detrimental effect of adding more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. According to Oregon Public Broadcasting, in an unanimous vote by Portland City Council, a measure was approved to capture and use 100% of the methane. That pesky 23% will be converted into renewable natural gas, also known as RNG, for use as a transportation fuel, which with aims to replace diesel. That could cut carbon emissions by 20,000 metric tons. A processing facility to convert the methane into RNG and an RNG refueling station will be constructed this year at the treatment plant. And the Bureau of Environmental Services is converting some of its vehicle fleet to run on RNG. The Bureau estimates that the $9 million project could pay for itself within 3 to 8 years, although currently they don't have any local buyers for the potential RNG. For the time being, the Bureau will sell the gas to Clean Energy Renewables, which will then resell the RNG on the national market, but I'm assuming they'd rather keep all the poo gas local. As a commitment to keeping this project as environmentally responsible as possible, Clean Energy Renewables has agreed to use traceable credits to ensure that the RNG is used as fuel for vehicles. To put this simply, Nick Fish, the commissioner who oversees environmental services, made this statement. When I told my 13-year-old about it, he said I should explain it this way. We're going to be turning poop into power. And you know what? It's not only poop that can be turned into renewable biogas. Did you know that rancid mayonnaise could also fuel our energy needs? Geek.com reports on just that. Michigan State University's food stores took delivery of 500 2.5-gallon tubs of mayonnaise for use in its cafeterias, as it does on what I'm assuming is a fairly regular basis. But this delivery was a little off. Students began complaining about the taste, and after a little bit of investigation, it was discovered that the shipment had gone bad. At some point in the supply chain, the 10,000 pounds of mayo had frozen and then thawed, basically spoiling it. MSU Food Stores Matt Rodewald had to figure out what to do with the large amount of mayo that the university could no longer use. Normally, MSU donates unused food to local food banks, but since the mayo had gone bad, that was not an option. Also, due to the enormous amount of mayo, Rodewald couldn't justify simply throwing it away. Luckily, in 2013, MSU commissioned, built, and began operating an anaerobic digester on campus. An anaerobic digester is a sealed tank that can turn organic waste into methane by warming the waste in a sealed, oxygen-free environment. In a single year, the digester can turn 17,000 tons of waste into methane, which can then produce 2.8 million kilowatt-hours of electricity. The mayo is actually a perfect source of fuel for the digester. Mayonnaise, as you should know, is a mixture of soybean oil, modified egg, vinegar, and corn syrup, and is high in sugars and fats, things that the microorganisms that produce methane crave. So all that mayo ended up being turned into energy instead of ending up in a smelly landfill, or being used as special sauce by burger joints. Hooray! You know what? I hate change. Every single thing about it. No matter how hard you try, change is inevitable. It's terrible, and there really should never be any change. What I hate worst about it is how it weighs your pocket down and makes jingly noises when you walk. Well, you were thinking I was talking about a different kind of change? Yeah. Anyway, I really don't like having loose change. I dump any nickels, dimes, and quarters I get into a change purse in our vehicle for parking meters, and I throw all those pennies into a jar at home, bringing it to the bank every 3 to 5 years to turn it into about, I don't know, $7 or $8. Those damn 1 cent pennies also cost roughly 1.5 cents to manufacture, so we really should just stop using them. But if we started rounding prices so pennies wouldn't happen, everyone would have a fit. You know prices would be rounded up, not down. So what are we to do? Turn it into ones and zeros encoded in plastic. At least that's what South Korea is doing, according to Engadget. As of April 20th, South Korean shoppers at the 7-Eleven, CU, E-Mart, Lot Mart, and Lot Department Store can opt to have their change deposited into mobile and prepaid cards as part of a trial. South Koreans are very receptive to this idea. The country spent $47 million alone producing coinage in 2016, and according to the Korea Herald, two-thirds of people surveyed by the Bank of Korea say they don't carry loose change anymore, and half of those surveyed supported plans for a cashless future. The trial won't necessarily lead to South Korea becoming completely cashless overnight, but at least for convenient shopping, this is the way of the future. No more change. It is worth pointing out that yes, making loads of plastic cards isn't exactly environmentally friendly, but that impact pales in comparison to the mining and smelting of all that metal into coinage that no one wants. Hooray! Did you know that you can turn a lot of invasive and waste plants into paper instead of just throwing it away or burning it? It's true, and you can learn that whole process at this show's sponsor, Pulp & Deckel. Pulp & Deckel is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, and by creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products. And guess what? We have a truck that can make paper just about anywhere in Portland because it has water, power, a pulse-making beater, and a 12-ton press packed inside. Browse the rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out our up-and-coming mobile options and classes by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckel.com. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might give you something special. I eagerly await a future where I don't have to leave the house for anything except for leisure, and I'm sure you probably feel the same way. By having our essential goods delivered to multiple doorsteps in the neighborhood, instead of having everyone darting about in fuel-burning vehicles collecting goods just for themselves, we can help our environment. However, to make those deliveries, we are subjecting those poor couriers to all the things we hate about the surface world: traffic, weather, and animal attacks. Yep, animal attacks. The vast majority of which are caused by household dogs. Gizmodo reports that last year there were 6,755 dog attacks on postal workers, an increase of 206 from the previous year, but less than the 14% increase in 2015. Why are the attacks increasing? The Associated Press points out that with the increase of online shopping in outlets like Amazon, shipping companies have shifted a lot of the last-run deliveries to the United States Postal Service, as it has the infrastructure to accomplish the final home delivery of goods. Overall, while attacks have been increasing, the severity of those attacks has been going down. The average cost of insurance claims by postal workers concerning dog-induced injuries last year was $33,230, according to the Insurance and Information Institute and State Farm. That is a princely sum, but is actually a 10% decrease from the previous year. Reasons for the less intense injuries can be attributed to the training and tools available to postal workers. They take training courses where they learn to use their mail satchels as dog shields, and to carry things like dog biscuits and special anti-dog pepper spray. They also have their very own app called Trip Hazards, where they can log, among other things, addresses that have known aggressive canines on site so they can be fully prepared ahead of time. Professor of Supply Chain Management at Northeastern University, Rob Lieb, expects that dog attacks will continue to rise as more and more of us opt for home delivery instead of leaving our homes for goods. Of course, all this is moot once robots and drones replace the postal workers and all human couriers, but then another animal will be a threat to deliveries. I would see eagles, not dogs, taking out drones, Lieb said. And once you get past the bitterness, you start actually tasting the strawberry in there. It's interesting. Mint and strawberry and hops. I can't say it enough. We need to be a more environmentally conscious species. Not because we're killing the planet. The planet is actually completely indifferent to us and will keep on spinning regardless. But our actions are altering the environment in ways that hurt us. What would you say if I told you that due to global warming, potato chip supplies can dwindle to dangerous levels, causing prices of chips to skyrocket? It's true, and it's happening to Japan right now. As the global environment warms, it increases the frequency and strength of typhoons. According to Bloomberg.com, a record number of typhoons hit northern Japan last year. The typhoons decimated Calbee Incorporated's primary potato crop, which is located in Hokkaido, causing Calbee to temporarily halt the sales of 15 types of its potato chips. That means that shelves in Japan that normally stock popular chip flavors, such as pizza, ketchup, shrimp, and spiced cod, are now barren, as evidenced by many sad photographs on Twitter. Japanese chip fanciers have turned to the secondary market to get their chip fix, paying upwards of 1,250 yen, which is roughly $12, for a single bag, which is six times its normal price. And there is no sign of when the aptly named potato crisis will end. Regulations limit the amount of potatoes that can be imported into Japan, so either Japan will have to wait for the potato harvest to get better, or harvest earlier, which will just end up continuing the shortage. I'll report more as this develops. Or not. I do suggest hitting up your local Asian grocers to stockpile those tasty, tasty shrimp chips. And now for something completely different. If you are single and use dating apps to try to find that special someone, you're probably not choosing the best profile photo. That's the advice being given after dating app Hinge went through its hookup data, according to Mashable. Hinge requires users to add 6 photos of themselves to their profiles, and users can like and comment on each of them individually. To try to determine which photos work best, they tag thousands of randomly selected photos with 35 different description labels, like hair up, or hair down, or solitary, or with another person, and so on. Their findings were quite interesting. A couple data points were called out specifically in their article, so let me give you a rundown of the ones that I found the most amusing. Don't use a Snapchat-esque filter or wear sunglasses in your photos, or do anything to obscure your face. You want people to like you, not an altered image of you. Also, don't post photos with other people that could be seen as a significant other. This is a monogamous dating app, remember? Photos in which you are engaged in sporting activities get a lot of traction. For women, sports photos are 166% more likely to get liked, and for men, that number is 45% more likely. Details in the photos have a surprising effect on their likability as well, and those details are different based on gender. For women, photos in which teeth are shown while smiling increased the likability by 76%, and looking away from the camera had a 74% increase in the likes. For men, smiling without showing teeth was preferred and had a 43% like increase. But look straight ahead, guys, that gives the likes a boost by 102%. As cool as it may sound, don't use photos of you on the beach. Photos of women on the sand got 47% less likes, and men on the beach got 80% less. Remember, people don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere. Do not use selfies. Selfies were 40% less likely to be liked, and if those selfies were taken in a bathroom, likes dropped by 90%. Stay out of the bathroom. Posed photos in general are evidently not very effective, which is odd because 80% of photos posted are just that, posed. Candid shots were 15% more successful in getting those precious likes. According to Hinge's VP of Marketing, Olivia Abramowitz, the basic takeaway from all that data is to choose photos that, quote, show you in your natural state doing something that you love. By demonstrating that you are, in fact, a real imperfect human being that genuinely enjoys doing something that can stimulate a conversation, you should eventually find the right person for you. I have some experience on that. 18 years ago, I posted a very honest ad on Yahoo Personals. Photos were more difficult to use on the internet back at that primitive time, so I had to use words to paint a picture that was basically, this is who I am, this is what I like, and if that sounds cool, let's talk. I got the attention of a certain special lady, and we've been together ever since. Gizmodo has my animal story this week, and it's about nakedness in mole rats. Yes, everyone's favorite ugly critter, the naked mole rat, may just save your life. The University of Illinois in Chicago had discovered that the naked mole rat can live up to 18 whole minutes without oxygen by changing their metabolism. The findings were published this week in Science! Just about every animal, including humans, uses oxygen to metabolize a sugar called glucose into energy. When oxygen is deprived of those animals and humans, the energy can't be created and the animals and humans, well, die. The naked mole rat has the ability to, when lacking oxygen, switch their metabolism to process fructose into energy instead of glucose, because fructose processing doesn't require oxygen. It's not nearly as effective as processing glucose, but when faced with less efficient energy production and no energy production, because you're dead, less energy seems like the best choice. Naked mole rats have this ability because of how they evolved in their preferred environment. They live in large underground colonies consisting of about 300 individuals. Because of their often overcrowded tunnel-based home, they made several adaptations to survive with limited resources, hence their ability to deal with varying oxygen levels without batting an eye. This ability is of great interest to medical science. When a human has a heart attack or stroke, oxygenated blood stops flowing to the brain, giving first responders mere minutes to get the oxygenated blood back into the brain before the brain cells start to die off. By studying the naked mole rat's fructose metabolizing processes, a way may be found to extend the amount of time a human can survive without an unbroken flow of oxygen until they can get to a medical facility or an oxygen tank. Thank you, naked mole rats, for being weird and awesome. Oh, and naked mole rats, woo! Let's go streaking down in the underground quad, woo! Naked mole rats. If you're still listening at this point, I'm going to assume that you like the show. So how about this proposition? Help me make the show, and I'll continue to do so. I'm all about choice, so here's a few options to support me in my endeavors. First, my voice is for hire! I could do voiceover work, voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. I figured out how to make this show. Maybe you want to make a show? I can totally help you out. If you feel you have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckle.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. Also, this show is on iTunes. Just search for All Hubby Beer and Talk, and what do you know? It's right there. You know something else you can do on iTunes? You can rate and review the show. Give me 5 stars, please. It makes a difference. The more ratings that I have, the more the show might show up as a suggestion. And more ears gives me an incentive to keep talking and drinking. And if you believe what I'm doing here is worth about 20 minutes of your attention each week and want to show your approval by financially supporting each episode, you can become my patron and donate at least $1 a month to the show. That's like 25 cents an episode. What else out there gives you 20 minutes of joy for a quarter? A capsule toy from a vending machine? Yeah, but you can't learn nearly as much from that as you can from me. If you want to throw some money at me, you can do that at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. And for those that already support me, thank you very much. And the beer is done. Strawberries. That means it's time for me to go. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, animals, and plants about the show, and then they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And you should check out ihabitradio.weebly.com for extra content, and please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckle.com, or on Twitters and Instagram at ihabitradio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!